It's great to be here, Tim. Thank you for asking me to speak on behalf of Al-Anon. I didn't know, I usually wing it. But when I wing it, I step away and go, damn, I forgot all that stuff I wanted to say. So I thought I'd do a combination of the two. I would read and wing at the same time. So first, a little bit about me and how I got here. We'll go with the background. I was born in Miami, Florida, and my mother is a Holocaust survivor. And that came with lots of good stuff. So I'm first generation Holocaust survivor, and that ties into this conversation down the road. And I've shared some of this with my home group, so sorry guys if you have to hear it again. My mother was in hiding in an attic, in an attic. Although there is a part of this story that makes me wonder, because when I asked her why Grandpa left the attic to go out into the streets in Belgium and was picked up by the Gestapo and taken to concentration camp, I was told it's because he had to go out and gamble. So I've wondered how far back addiction goes in my family. He died into death marches. My grandmother, who managed to survive it, this little 4 foot something woman, she sent my mother and her sister off to the Catholic nuns who hid them for many years. And when they returned, eventually my grandmother remarried my step-grandfather, Felix, who had fought for the French Resistance, because he came home one day and his family was completely gone. Everybody had been wiped out. And then together, my grandmother and my step-grandfather, my grandfather, remarried, moved to the States. They got the hell out of Europe. I wonder what they would think of America now, but that's, they left Europe and they had a son, my Uncle Freddie, and Uncle Freddie was the very first addict that I had met. He was a raging alcoholic and was constantly getting in trouble. And finally, dear Uncle Freddie, who was also really cute and hip and had these two very strange French European parents, held up a movie theater at gunpoint and went to jail. And my grandparents were in Al-Anon. These two little, you know, broken English people went to Al-Anon. And so they went to the judge, and the judge said, Paula, Felix, what should we do with Freddie? And they said, stick him in jail. And he did. He went to jail. He came out relatively sober for a period of time. I ended up working for the police department as a mechanic, which is ironic, and did eventually go back to alcohol and eventually died at the age of 50, which was unfortunate. So that's my mom, who, from all of this trauma, acquired a borderline personality disorder. And of course, was incredibly attracted to my narcissistic, charismatic father. And they made a really great pair. And my dad, so there was no drinking in the home, because Jews don't drink. But they do beat the hell out of their children if they're narcissistic ragers. He also had a horrible upbringing, you know, was raised in poverty, and at 9 and 10 years old, he had a paper route so he could keep on the electricity, because his mother would leave at 3 and 4 months at a time for work. And I think he was dyslexic. I believe from some of the stories he told me, he was probably sexually abused also. And I got to, you know, I grew up in all of this, and used to sit across the table from people who had numbers burnt into their arms. And so lots of trauma, lots of drama. No one talked, everybody screamed. Sometimes I really felt like, you know, a lot of connection to Italian friends I had with their families, lots of screaming and yelling. And, you know, it was, in some ways it was lovely, but in other ways it really kind of sucked. And my father was violent and unpredictable. You know, he was a rageaholic. Sometimes I wish he would have had a drink or smoked some pot. He might have been a much happier person. But, you know, growing up in that kind of chaos and that kind of trauma, it definitely, as a child, you have to learn how to adapt, right? I'm sure the Holocaust thing may not resonate, but my guess is that most of our parents come from trauma of some sort. It doesn't have to be this kind of trauma. And so I think that's why our early upbringing is often influenced by people who were very badly hurt themselves. That's what narcissism and borderline really is. It's people who were badly hurt and didn't have the 12 steps or Al-Anon or people who cared enough to help them. So I've been responsible for my own well-being physically and financially since I was 14 years old. And I really was proud of that for a really long time. I took a lot of pride in saying, you know, I can take care of myself financially and paid for my own clothes. And even though my parents could afford it, used to offer my parents paychecks. And then one day, I love my therapist. She said, do you know that that's not okay? And I said, "That what's not okay?" She said that supporting yourself financially at the age of 14 is really not okay. That it was actually you who was supposed to be supported and cared for. And you didn't get any of that because you were basically being raised by very angry children. I had no idea. I mean, this was the beginning of therapy, awakening this concept of saving the parent so that I am okay. I grew up doing all the things I thought I was supposed to do. I went to college. I got a job. I married a nice, big quotes, Jewish man who really wasn't so nice. I had children. And then at age 45, I came out as a lesbian. Surprise! coming out was by far one of the most difficult things I have ever done. It literally broke up the family, and I'm sure it's definitely screwed up my kids, but I'm very grateful that they have actually turned out to be very strong, powerful, good young men. But I also think that coming out was my first step in recovery. I think that's what we're all doing. Don't worry. But I think in some ways, we're all coming out. It's not like there's a hidden step 13 where... Although, who knows? But I think that recovery is a form of coming out. And... I mean, I was asked a lot by people, like, how could you not know? I mean, the truth is, when I was like 13 years old, I went to my mom and I said, I think I like girls more than I like boys. And she said, that's okay, honey. It'll pass. So it's not like she like messed me up or something. It's not like they're evil. She did say that too, but that was down the road. And it definitely had its influence on me. But I think I just didn't know because I was so shut down to how I feel and who I am, that it didn't even occur to me that I could be honest with myself. So how did I get to Al-Anon? Well, I dated and married a bunch of addicts. I married a narcissist the first time, and I dated people who, I don't think I thought that they were addicts at first because they were so high functioning, right? But food addicts, and eventually married an alcoholic, an alcoholic in recovery. And our relationship has been tumultuous. It's also been an incredible growth point and a huge learning point. But at one point I had to stop. You know, if the things keep happening over and over again, you have to look at the one constant source. And that was me. And finally, a good therapist said, have you thought about Al-Anon? And my therapist had been saying, have you thought about CODA? So I started going to CODA, and then I started going to Al-Anon, and then the lights started going on. So I think it's been almost 4 years now that I've been going. I love the word recovery. Except that I think that sometimes we have only this one-dimensional perspective of what recovery is, right? Because it sounds like recovery is like, I was sick and now I'm getting better, which is true, right? To some extent. But I think of recovery as, what did I lose? And what am I now recovering within myself? How has being closeted in all aspects of my life affected me? And how do the 12 steps wake me up and bring me home to myself? So I've been a career counselor and a recruiter for about 20 years, and I have a master's degree in counseling. And I say this because I've studied career development, and the career development model is basically you grow up and you start right around the age of 13. This is if everything goes well, right around the age of 13. And you probably have children or you know children. You get the idea that you are a human being that's going to die at some point, and that you're no longer a part of your parents, and that you are a separate entity, and you're going to have to start figuring out what it is you're going to do with your life. And so if everything goes well, between the ages of 13 and 30, you explore, you try new things, you discover yourself. But if you have trauma at some point, sexual abuse, growing up in an alcoholic home, divorce, or you yourself become an addict, that career development stops. So people in alcohol recovery know that when you start drinking is when you stop growing. And so I was struck today, because I knew I was going to talk about this, listening to people getting their chips, right? And they're saying, I'm 15, right? I'm 3, I'm 4, I'm 25. Yeah, we are. Because that's how long we've been in recovering ourselves. And that is this journey that we're all on together. Well, I'm an addict also, and I never forget it. And I think of my codependency like I would think of diabetes. And that if I start to eat too much sugar or too much meat or something that's not going to make me, it's going to make me sick, then I'm going to I do have, you know, borderline diabetes. So I know that I have to take care of myself. And for me, codependency and enabling is a disease, and it needs to be treated as an addiction, or my belief that I can control someone needs to be in treatment. And so I know that I actually have to go to meetings, have to sponsor, and have to have sponsees. And it keeps me, I wouldn't say sober, but it keeps me on this side of my recovery, of the things that I'm trying to recover. And part of that addiction has led me to twisting myself into a pretzel so that I will be loved. It makes me adjust my expectations. It makes me say yes when I really want to say no. It's why I habitually disassociate when somebody is yelling at me, or I think somebody's going to yell at me. And I do my best to, I don't do my best, I do my worst by trying to push through situations instead of stopping them. And the 12 steps has been an incredible process to bringing this way I hide myself into my consciousness as often as possible. So in my recovering of myself, I find myself asking, what do I need to recover? That literally, what do I need to recover that I lost? In order to be truly myself in the world, what do I have to recover? And what did I lose in the process of being an adult at 14, of being afraid of watching my brother pee in his pants because my father had scared him so badly? And I would encourage you to ask the same questions to yourself. You know, what did you lose because of either the early addiction to controlling others or hiding? Did you lose your childhood? Did you lose your dreams? Did you lose your boundaries? Did you lose your sense of your likes and your dislikes? And are you learning the difference between tolerance and patience? because this is the thing I struggle with so much, is that I tolerate so much, thinking that I'm being patient, but really it's just being tolerant. And not tolerant in a good way, but tolerant in a way that, you know, like, I remember when my son was learning karate or some sport where they kick the shit out of each other, and they kept saying, if you just stand still and learn to take it, eventually you get used to it, which I thought was so stupid. It's like, why isn't he just not running? But that wasn't, you know, martial arts was about, you know, being able to take it. Like, you get used to being punched, right? You get used to being kicked, and eventually you become numb to it. And I think that's what happens. That's what happened to me. I think that's what happens to us. So the thing I love most about being in recovery is looking in the corners and in the cracks of my own heart, my own soul, and doing that with my sponsees and asking questions that hopefully get them to stop looking to other people for the answers and to start recovering the parts of themselves that they lost. And this path that we're on requires courage, strength, and hope. But it also requires each other, because community is what keeps us together, and community is what holds that place, because it's easy to get lost. I mean, turn on the radio and listen to the songs. They are the most codependent messages any of us have ever heard, or watched the television shows or the movies. I die for you. What I wouldn't do for you. Without you, my life has no meaning. Reinforcement, reinforcement. We're not, I mean, it's like promoting addiction, right? So I have things in place besides my community and the 12 steps. I meditate every day. I pray every day. I'm constantly handing things over to God, because God knows much better than I do about handling stuff. And I learned a new word lately that I really loved and I wanted to share with you. It's a Sanskrit word. It's anugraha, and it means the unfolding of grace within us. Yeah, I love it. I think it's going to be my next tattoo here. This tattoo is Hebrew. I intentionally placed it here, by the way, to remind me of where my grandparents had theirs. But also, this literally means a great miracle happened here. And it's so true. I mean, the fact that I'm here is truly miraculous. And the fact that I'm in recovery is a miracle. And the fact that I'm recovering the lost parts is a miracle. And then I find this other word, anugraha, which is the unfolding of grace within me, which is God is me. God is within you. And all we're doing is watching the unfolding, the recovering of ourselves as we go through this 12-step process. So what is life like now? Perpetually interesting. I'm redoing my step 4. This was recommended to me by somebody in my CODA group, that I go back over step 4 and I look at it from how I've harmed myself. And I'm loving that. I've done step 4 at least twice. So this is my third time now, which is my focus. I'm in a fascinating part in my life. My youngest child is leaving. My parents are transitioning. My marriage is ending. And they say that, you know, the first 50 to 60 years of your life is about doing what other people want. And then from there on, you kind of got a pass to do what you want. And I'm going to take advantage of that. So I am so grateful for the 12 steps. The Serenity Prayer is my guiding light. If I don't know what to do, I repeat that as my mantra. And I make myself vulnerable and open to grace, God, source, however you want to call it, to show up, because I don't have all the answers, but I know grace does. And I allow it to unfold perpetually. And I go to my meetings and I support people. I mean, I think the thing I love most about our community is that I am with people who are awake. And it doesn't matter whether we relapse because we show back up. And I don't know many people. I mean, people with friends of mine who are not in recovery, we speak different languages because they're not really awake. I mean, they think they are, but they're not but they're not really willing to do the work that takes place here with you. And for that, I have such gratitude. And I think I'll just stop there. Thank you.